And hello again, everyone. Welcome back to One Patriot Place here on WBLZ Radio. You're on the air with Stephen Murph. We are One Patriot Place. You can also find our podcast on the fullpresscoverage.com. You be sure to check out our friends over there. They do a great job covering all the sports, especially the Pats, as well as us. And they kindly publish our podcast for you, for us, I should say, and you. We have a great show lined up for you guys today because our guest is already in the studio with us, Evan Lazar from CLNS Media. Evan is a fantastic cover beat writer for the Patriots. He covers the Pats and does a great job there. He's been on the show many times with us. And now that the Pats are kind of out of it and the Super Bowl slate is set, he's joining us now. So welcome back to the show, Evan. We appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Murph, I know you wanted to kick it right into gear, so we'll start off with you.
Well, I mean, how lucky is Evan? He might be here for what is the last One Patriots Place ever, because Steve, we're taping this on Monday, because Steve will be going to TB12 tomorrow to do an interview and go through the TB12 workout. And he may not survive. If that happens, we're done. We're over with. I'm not doing this show with anybody else. Nobody likes me. Nobody can fucking stand me. So if he does have a coronary and dies tomorrow or strokes out or something, this is the last one. Evan, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, they might get him on the field next year, too. You know, you never know. They get him on that TB12 diet and everything. You know, you could see him in a Patriots uniform.
Yeah.
I think Brandon Spikes would leave me in the dust in the 40. So.
Shit. We're not drinking yet. We haven't started. Just so you folks know, we have not started drinking yet. Evan, it was a very interesting day in the NFL yesterday, bud.
Yeah.
What did you think? Let's start with the Titans game. What did you think of the Titans game? What did they do wrong? And what did Kansas City, if anything, do right, except, you know, hide holding penalties?
Yeah, you know, I was waiting for the Titans to run into an opponent where their inability to pass the ball and really just like their inability to have it, they don't really have a diverse offense, right? They have a couple of different things that they do in the running game, and they kind of just lean on Derrick Henry just being a beast and having that offensive line move guys off the ball. And then they have the play action passing game off of the running game. And it's kind of a rudimentary offense. It's really nothing that complex. And it almost came back to bite them against the Patriots. The Patriots offense just couldn't hold up their end of the bargain with the fact that they really didn't have that great of a passing attack. And the way that Ryan Tannehill was playing and the numbers he was putting up in the regular season really wasn't sustainable, and they ran into some better defenses and some better teams, you know, in the postseason, obviously, and it finally caught up to them. The Chiefs were able to stop the run, you know, with some success and force the Titans to throw the ball, and their inability to throw the ball is why they're not going to the Super Bowl.
That's right. That's exactly it. And that was my next question. How much money did Ryan Tannehill cost himself in these playoffs? Because he was the hottest quarterback in the NFL maybe the last 6-8 weeks of the season, and then it just kind of, you know, faded the fuck away. And it's not good. I can't see the Titans bringing him back. Can you?
Well, it's actually funny because when we talked to Mike Vrabel before the wild card game, somebody asked him about, you know, Ryan Tannehill's amazing performance so far during the regular season and since he became the starter. And Vrabel was kind of lukewarm on putting too much praise on Tannehill or really saying that he was that impressed by Tannehill's performance. So I think the Titans kind of knew that what Tannehill was doing was both unsustainable and kind of smoke and mirror to a degree, or just not kind of real or something that he could sustain. So I don't think that they were quite sold on him being the next guy. Now, I do think that they're going to bring him back and probably bring him back on a deal that is really just a one-year deal. Maybe it ends up being 2 years, but there's really only guaranteed money in the first year. And they'll try to roll with it and see what they can get in the draft at the position maybe and go from there. I don't think that it's that outlandish to think that they can be a solid team again next year, a playoff team again next year with him as the quarterback. I just think that they realized how limited they were in a game against the Chiefs where they knew they needed offense. They knew they weren't going to be able to win that game like they won the Patriots game. And they needed some offense out of that side of the ball, and they couldn't get it in the passing game. And it was a win for the analytics people, and the Niners killed the analytics people by running the ball 50 times in the next game.
Yeah,
they sure did.
Yeah. In that Chiefs game, the one thing that I was surprised at, there was plenty of time where I thought Tannehill was getting good protection. He had time to survey the field. Now, not all the plays, obviously, but there was plenty of times where he did, and it didn't seem like, you know, and we've heard this before, that the Titans receivers weren't getting any separation. Did you have that feeling as well?
Yeah, you know, I watching it on the TV copy, their Titans receivers, for the most part, are not guys that create tons of separation. You know, Corey Davis and A.J. Brown are big-bodied receivers that win a lot of contested catch situations, are really good after the catch, things like that. But again, I think what it comes back to is that their schemes and their passing game, because they have Tannehill at quarterback, because of just the way that they wanted to run their offense, I think that finally, and the Patriots really kind of sniffed out what they were going to do offensively too, for the most part. But the Chiefs were able to just kind of wait on some of the things that they knew that they were going to do regularly, the crossing patterns off of play action, the horizontal stretch of the defense, all those types of things that they like to do off of their running game. And I think the Chiefs were just kind of ready for it for most of the game. They made a few plays late in the game, did the Titans to kind of get back into it a little bit. But I think the Chiefs were just kind of looking at the tape of the last couple of weeks and said, listen, you know, for an NFL offense, this team really doesn't do all that much. You know, it's really not that complex of an offense. So all we got to do is play sound football and be fundamentally sound and be gap sound, and we're going to be okay. It's not like they're going to throw an entire kitchen sink or a wide array of plays at them. You know, I think that that's the biggest difference. You see two running games that made it this far with San Francisco and with Tennessee. Tennessee has two or three things that they do well in the ground game. They certainly are an outside zone, wide zone based team. They run that very effectively, and they have a few counters. The Niners, on the other hand, run 10 different running schemes, maybe even more than that. They run gap, right. They run zone, they run trap schemes, they run pulling plays, they have a fullback that can block, they have the tight end that can block. You know, they do a million different things with their running game, and it's really impressive to watch how great they are at so many different things. It reminds me of like when the Patriots offensive line, the Patriots running game is at its peak, like last year during the stretch run in the playoffs. Just the wide diversity of things that they can do. This Titans offense was like what Herman Boone said in Remember the Titans. We had three plays, and like Novocaine, we're eventually going to knock you out with one of them, right? This Niners offense is something that they do everything with, right? And they have an answer and a counter to every little thing the defense is going to throw at them to stop some of their base concepts. And I think the Titans just ran into a situation where they needed more offense than they did in the first two matchups. And they found a kind of a roadblock in the fact that I think Kansas City was ready for some of the base things that they were going to do on a regular basis.
Yeah, and plus San Francisco, you know, they were rolling out Debo a few times, which helped loosen things up.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, he's really a great player already as a rookie. And I think that what's really most impressive about their entire team, like I said, is not only the fact that Kyle Shanahan can call so many different things, but how well their offensive line and their blockers at tight end and fullback execute the different running schemes that they do run. It's really difficult to coach up a team to be able to run that many different kind of variations of running plays and be able to do them all at such a high level like they do.
Speaking of a high level, Patrick Mahomes had himself a day yesterday. Do you see any, am I wrong in thinking that it was this another game where, you know, 300 yards was put up in a way that, was in any way lucky? He threw a couple of bombs down the field that, you know, ended up working out for him. So a couple of plays, he could have been looking at, you know, 200 yards instead of 300 yards. What did you think of Mahomes's performance, and why the hell was everybody just scared to hit him when he was running down the sideline like
yeah.
that? Because he was just bracing himself to get hit, and it never came.
Yeah, that was definitely strange. I think the thing with Mahomes that I'm seeing more and more, you know, I think Patriots fans are getting a little bit sick of hearing how special Mahomes is and how the things that he's doing nobody else is doing and nobody else has ever done. I don't think it's that. I actually think that the things that he's doing now are more sustainable than the things that he was doing before. All the no-look passes and the 65-yard bombs down the field off platform, thrown across his body, across the field and stuff like that. Those are all highlight reel plays that are awesome to see and are exciting and all those types of things. But that wasn't going to give him a Hall of Fame career, right? He wasn't going to get a 10 to 15-year starter, multiple Super Bowl appearances, doing no-look passes and throwing across his body and doing all that kind of stuff that everybody labels like Patrick Mahomes is the second coming of something, or he's this new, you know, amazing kind of form of quarterback. No, the stuff that makes him now, I think, is that he's becoming more mature as a passer. He's making better decisions in the pocket, within the scheme, within the framework of the offense. He's taking better care of the football, and he's running the plays that are being called in the huddle. And he's making the throws that the players are asking him to make and getting to the right answers and getting to the right receivers. So that is going to be way more successful for him in the long term than him running around a bunch and throwing the ball like a maniac, you know, like a side arm or a shortstop, whatever the case may be. Those things are fun, and we can put them on Twitter and we can be excited about the highlights. But I think the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes knew after that game, especially last year against the Patriots in the AFC title game, that he needed to be more fundamentally sound. He needed to be more of a, you know, looking at things more of a traditional way and be able to win like a traditional quarterback more often and not, you know, just rely solely on the gimmicks.
Why do they have such a difficult time at the beginning of these games, the Chiefs?
Yeah, I think that a lot of teams play better when their backs are against the wall. I think that a team like that, too, that relies so much on their speed, they need to get some of that extra juice because they need to be able to outrun, you know, defenses and coverage or whatever the case may be. I'm not sure exactly. It's kind of weird, too, because, you know, Andy Reid, his MO for most of his coaching career is that he's one of the best scripters in the entire NFL. The first 20 to 25 plays is usually Reid comes up with something fantastic in those first 20, 25 plays that the defense can't stop. And they're usually a front running team, especially last year. And even at times this year where they've kind of reverted back to what they were last year, they have been a team that's always played from ahead. That's always gone out to huge leads and kind of just blitzes the other team with speed and overwhelms the other team to these big leads. And in the playoffs so far, obviously that hasn't been the case. So I don't think that they're going to be able to come back on that Niners defense the same way that they've came back the last 2 weeks. So they're going to have to figure out in the next 2 weeks what they can do to get off to better starts, because the Niners do not give up the big plays like some of these other defenses have to the Chiefs. So the Niners are not going to let them get back in the game with, you know, two or three plays on offense.
You know, being a Patriots fan, I couldn't help but notice, you know, once again, folks talking about the easy road that the Patriots take through the playoffs every year to get to the Super Bowl. But Mahomes hasn't faced or beaten anybody that's higher than a four seed. They've faced the Patriots, of course, in the playoffs. They haven't beaten anybody higher than a four seed. The Colts were trash last year. The you know, Texans are the Texans, and now they you know, kind of came out and went nuts again on broke down plays and ended up beating this Titans team. Do you think that's going to be an issue and going forward for Mahomes?
I don't know. I think that their offense especially has proven that it is up there with some of the all-time great offenses that we've seen in the history of the league, I would say, because okay. Not only did they do it last year at a really high rate, they've now done it this year at a pretty successful rate also. So this isn't something that's going away. You know, it wasn't a one-year wonder. It wasn't anything like that. It's clearly something that's been sustainable in Kansas City. I also think that their defense has gotten a lot better, and it was a big reason why they won that game yesterday, was how much better they've gotten on that side of the ball. Guys like Frank Clark and Tyrann Mathieu and, you know, some of the other kind of smaller acquisitions that they've made, like Suggs or Mike Pennell or whoever the case may be. Spagnuolo has really improved that. Yeah, Spagnuolo's really improved that defense a lot from what it was last year. Last year was their Achilles heel, and this year they've been able to kind of be more of a force on that side of the ball. So I don't think that this is a cheap run by any means. Now, the Titans were obviously not the best AFC Championship game opponent that they could have played. You know, they weren't Baltimore, they weren't New England, they weren't even Houston. You know, they just kind of got hot at the right time and went on a nice little run, no doubt. But I think we all kind of knew that the Titans, they were Cinderella, and Cinderella often falls short, right? You know, they get to the ball, but they don't always, you know, finish the deal. So I think that we knew that the Titans were on kind of a unsustainable run here, that they were going to run into a better team at some point and get beat. So it wasn't the best championship game opponent, that's for sure. But I do think that the Chiefs were 1 or 1A in the AFC behind Baltimore this season. And, you know, it's too bad we didn't get to see Baltimore versus the Chiefs or the Patriots versus the Chiefs again in a rematch. But I think that they are deserving to be in the Super Bowl.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt they're deserving. Just going forward, I'm sitting here and I know I'm looking past the Super Bowl that I don't think they're going to win. It's going to be really difficult to keep doing this. Mahomes is still on his rookie deal. They have 17 free agents on their roster and $22 million in cap space. I'm really looking forward to watching this offseason and how they try to keep things around him and keep this talent around him. Because I think last year they had a better offense than they do this year. I think this year their defense stepped up a little more and helped them out. So we'll see what happens going forward. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, let's switch gears and go to the later game. And I thought the 49ers came out. They were really impressive right from the get-go. That, as you mentioned, that running game, it's just – that was pretty incredible to watch. I mean – They weren't hiding what they were doing. They just ran out there and they took Green Bay right out of the game real early. I thought their defense, as you said, arguably the best in the league. I thought their defense played super well. I just thought it was a very impressive game for the 49ers. Granted, they were at home, but you just had to be impressed by the way they approached this whole game and the way they came out.
Yeah, you know, the Niners right now remind me of a Super Bowl bound Patriots team in the sense that their execution on both sides of the ball, the attention to detail, the situational football, third down, red area, that kind of stuff. This is like what the Patriots look like when they're at their best too. You know, just the execution to get down to business and the fundamentals, be able to run the football first and foremost on offense. I think that nowadays we talk so much about passing, and I think passing is still the ideal avenue to move the ball through the air, because you do score more points and you score, you know, you can score frequently and with better efficiency if you can throw the ball better. But in certain matchups, in certain moments, in certain games, you got to be able to run the football, and running the football still has a place in football. That's certainly for sure. So I think that what we get caught up with, the, you know, in the analytics and the stats of it and all that kind of stuff, analytics are usually from a bird's eye view, right? We're looking at the entire sample across an entire season, and we're saying, okay, you know, in order to win X amount of games or to score X amount of points to win X amount of games, you know, you got to be able to throw the football over the long run. And that's definitely true. But when you get down to specific matchups in the playoffs, you can run the football effectively against certain defenses. And I think that San Francisco knew that they were going to be able to run the ball, at least with some consistency, against Green Bay. And it ended up being way better than they expected, I think. I think anybody right. expected, obviously, but I think that there, you know, there's still a place for running the football in certain situations, certain matchups, and that's what the playoffs are all about. The playoffs are all about matchups and what you are going to put out there on Sunday, and it really doesn't matter, you know, what the 16-game sample tells you, because it's not a 16-game season. It's a one-game season. So they were able to run the football really effectively. Our guy Jimmy G threw 8 passes and is going to the Super Bowl, so that's great for him. And I think that this Niners team has probably been all season long the most complete team, because of their offense, because of their defense, because of their special teams. All three phases are playing at an extremely high level. You know, we talk a lot about the running game, and rightfully so, but the defense might be the best unit. Probably is the best unit that San Francisco has. It's just so beautiful what they do on offense, and Kyle Shanahan is just such a master schemer that it's just really fun to watch the moving chess pieces and the synchronization and the kind of the dance that offensive line and the tight end George Kittle and Juszczyk and all those guys do up front. But the defense is really what is carrying this team, and it's got such a Seattle feel to it still, the system that they're running, the coverage system certainly in particular, a lot of 3-deep zone, a lot of keeping plays in front of them, but they have a front four that is so ferocious with Nick Bosa right. and those guys up front that they get after the passer and they stop the run at a 3-deep. So it's really just an elite defense, and it has a lot of shade schematically of those Seattle defenses certainly. But I don't know if those Seattle defenses, maybe prime Michael Bennett was as good as Nick Bosa, but I don't know if they had as many horses up front as this Niners defense does.
Yeah, that front seven is really fun to watch. I mean, if you're watching the game without a horse in the race, you know, you just want to watch guys play football. I think that is a really fun defense to watch. They have, like you said, they have so many horses up there, and all of them are outstanding players. You can't really pick one and say, well, we're going to try to take this guy away, because then they'll just hit you from somewhere else.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's really the difference, I think, from their defense. And certainly a lot of it had to do with the fact that they've had like 10 first round picks in the top 10 over the last like 5 years. Yeah, you know, when you have an opportunity to draft guys like Bosa and DeForest Buckner, right. and the list goes on and on of high draft picks in that front seven, it does help, kind of helps in the situation a lot. But even a guy like right. D Ford, they brought over obviously in a trade, and you know, some other pieces that are kind of a little bit more unsung heroes of that defensive front are just playing at a really high level.
They really are, and you can't stress enough that, I mean, if Jimmy hadn't gotten hurt last year and they ended up 10-6, that oh God, they wouldn't have been picking where they were, and you just sit there and say, why didn't we get a first round pick? Why didn't we get a first round pick? Unbelievable. Yeah. But no, I thought the game plan was one that I don't think that they necessarily went into this showdown with. I expected them to spread Green Bay out a lot more, get them into more man coverage, and let Jimmy throw the ball. I was really shocked at what they did, but it was just, you know, chewing up real estate like like the bubble was about to burst on home buying, and it was amazing thing to watch. They danced with a horse that got them there, and it was beautiful. It was another day that Discount Double Choke is going home. But he had fun. he had a lot of fun this year. Football became fun for him again. So we're happy now. He can go home to his wife and just, you know, talk about the fun season that they had and another blown opportunity to get his second because they also do have, I thought, a much better defense this year. Something that they keep saying that, you know, Rodgers, if he'd had this, if he'd had that, if he'd had the other thing, would have 10 Super Bowl victories by now. Not happening. He basically choked away this game in the first half, and then it was just a running show, and they had no answer for stopping the run yesterday, did they?
No, and I think it's what's interesting about the Rodgers thing is just I don't know. I didn't turn on First Take this morning. I don't know what Skip Bayless is saying about Aaron Rodgers today or anything like that, or Nick Wright or any of those guys. But if Brady were to play that kind of game in a championship game like that and have his team get blown out by 17, I just can't imagine the kind of the takes, especially at this age, right? You know, like at this stage of his career, if you put Brady, I think what's Rodgers, 36, 37, something like that. Yeah. If you put Brady back at that age and you put it that performance that Rodgers had yesterday, people are saying that Brady's done. You know, that's going to be the take this morning, is that Brady's toes, that he's finished, that, you know, they're never going to make it back to the Super Bowl, this, that, and the other thing. And with Rodgers, I don't, maybe that is what the takes are out there. Again, I'm not paying attention, but for the most part, I'm sure that it's everybody else's fault besides Aaron Rodgers, right? It's smart, that their defense didn't stop the run, that their offense was, you know, only Davante Adams was their only weapon, and besides Aaron Jones in the running game, and when they got behind, they couldn't run the football, yada, yada, yada. And that was the issue, and none of it was Rodgers. No. And I just think that all of us in New England, but all of us everywhere that look at Aaron Rodgers kind of objectively, quite frankly, over the last couple of years, I think we're at the point now where we need to start saying, you know, some of this is on him. You know, some of it is on Aaron Rodgers. And there was certainly some throws and some decisions in that game yesterday where, you know, he's not setting his feet and the ball is going all over the place and he's making the wrong reads and he's throwing the ball to the other team and things like that. And it's like at some point we need to all look at it and say, you know, Aaron Rodgers is a great talent, a great quarterback. He's going to the Hall of Fame. All those things are true. But maybe, just maybe, in the grand pantheon of the NFL universe, we've overrated him just a little bit.
There's a reason he's not on the all-time, all 100 team. That's all I'm saying, you know, along with certain other people that won't be there. All right, bud. while we still got some time, let's talk some Patriots free agency, and let's stick with the guys that we know. I'm saying that this is really difficult because it's becoming a, you know, which comes first, the chicken or the egg, with Tom Brady, and will Tom re-sign here without significant upgrades to the offense, and will significant upgrades be able to happen if Tom Brady is not under contract?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting question. I do think that some of the things that Brady is saying in the media, saying that he's prepared to take free agent visits and all that kind of stuff, those are all negotiation tactics, right? Like, maybe if the Patriots push him to the point where he's going to have to go take free agent visits, he'll do it. But I really don't think that it's his intention to do that. I think that
he made his first one at the MMA fights the other night. That was his first free agent visit. Yeah. Didn't you hear?
I think that he's really trying to force the Patriots' hand into being the first ones to come to the table with a real offer, not you know, an offer that he's going to scoff at, but something that he can take seriously and seriously consider signing, or at least a starting point of a negotiation. So I wouldn't look too much into what he said on Westwood One last night. I certainly wouldn't look into anything about the MMA fight. That's for sure.
Right.
I do think that there is an element, though, of we're at the point now with the Patriots and skill position players on offense where the draft, which is where they're all going to be the cheapest, is really not the avenue that they're able to take and have much, at least immediate success, and also just, you know, game-breaking success. We're not talking about a guy like Jacoby Myers who's going to put up 400 yards in the season, or even a guy like a Malcolm Mitchell who had a great rookie year and was a huge part of that run. But was Malcolm Mitchell a game changer for that team? I don't think so. A really good player.
He was able to excel as the third and fourth option in that offense.
Right. So in order to get the type of guys that we're talking about that are really going to move the needle for this offense, they're going to have to do it through trades and free agency, because they just have had better luck in doing that. You know, they've had better luck in going out and signing guys and bringing them in or trading for them, whether it's been Brandon Cooks or obviously going back to Moss and Welker or whoever the case may be. They've just had better luck with finding talent at wide receiver specifically through trades and free agency. So they're going to have to pay somebody. The point is they're going to have to pay somebody some money to come in here and catch some passes and make some plays in the passing game and actually move the needle for this offense in the passing game. So therefore, they're going to have to be careful with this Brady contract. Now, I say that, but at the same time, as it stands right now, if Tom Brady walks and goes to another team and plays some elsewhere in 2020, the Patriots are going to have $13.5 million of dead money on their cap because of the way that they voided the contract and the way that they set up this last year with him. So the cap, and if you follow the money, which is what we're always told to do over following the speculation and all the rumors and all that kind of stuff, if you follow the money, then it's telling you that the Patriots are fully planning on having Tom Brady be the quarterback in 2020, because they wouldn't have structured the voided deal the way that they did to carry that $13.5 million proration on the cap. That's really going to hinder them to go out and make, even if they don't re-sign Tom Brady, it's going to hinder them a little bit to go out there and make any type of big time move. So the only way you can get that number down is to get Brady under contract, probably get him through 2021, actually, in some sort of way, shape, or form, to spread those cap hits out across 2 years. And then they're going to have some money at that point to go out there and have some room to make some moves to elevate this offense, to bring back some of the guys on defense. I don't know if they're going to be able to afford to bring back Joe Tooney. That doesn't look likely. But if they can come up with a deal that's more, you know, if Tooney really wants to stay, then maybe there's a deal there to be had. But mainly bringing back the guys on defense, adding skill players on offense through the trades and free agency. Then let's get to the draft, which I know the three of us, that's our baby for the offseason. And once you get to the draft, then you can address the trenches in my mind, because that used to be, I mean, you guys remember, that used to be the Belichick MO, right? Yep. It was free agency and trades and in the offseason frenzy. That is when he went out there and
draft
got
linemen.
Right? That's when he got the receivers. That's when he got the cornerbacks. That's when he went out there and got the skill players. The draft was where he drafted on the offensive and defensive lines. The last couple of years, they picked Wynn 2 years ago, but they've picked N'Keal Harry. They've picked Sony Michel. They've picked some skill players really high in the draft. And I think, you know, those guys, I'm not going to bash those guys any more than I already have. But that the point is that I don't know if that strategy has necessarily worked out for them, because they just seem to be much better at projecting what the guys are going to do within their system from pro talent versus college guys.
Yeah, and looking at some guys that, you know, where they could get some cap relief, as you talked about, because even if they keep Brady, then it's $6.5 million that it's going to have to be included in that, and then of course whatever he's getting paid. You know, you look at, I mean, they can obviously redo the deal on a couple of veterans and lower their cap hit for this year. that would allow them to, you know, get some cap relief. You look at guys like Hightower, perhaps Gilmore. But then there's other guys. I mean, you look at a guy like Rex Burkhead. He has a $4 million cap hit this year. They drafted Damian Harris last year. You know, could this be a way of them letting Burkhead go? Even though I thought down the stretch he was perhaps – you could make an argument he was their most productive running back. I mean, they have a lot of decisions to make, and not the least of which is – you bring back Devin McCourty.
Yeah, you know, honestly, I kind of thought that Rex down the stretch might have been their best offensive skill player. You know, I know Edelman was really banged up, but I think that Rex's production and just his ability to create after contact and just make plays on his own was probably the best that they had in the postseason, in that one playoff game, certainly, and really in the last couple of weeks of the year. So I thought that Rex was really coming into his own. He was healthy finally, which I'm sure was a huge part of it. But at the same time, like you said, guys like him, guys like Marcus Cannon, who has a pretty massive cap hit, I'm sure there'll be a lot of discussion about what to do with Mohamed Sanu over the next couple of months also. You know, all those guys have a pretty hefty cap number next year. And past season, the Patriots decided on the defensive side of the ball especially to hang on to the veteran depth. Guys like Landon Roberts, Daron Harmon, you know, a lot of people wrote about it all offseason and into training camp about how they could go younger at certain spots and save some money, you know, and that would have been maybe 10 years ago. That might have been what Belichick would have done. You know, maybe he would have cut Daron Harmon or traded Daron Harmon and saved the cap space and rolled with the safeties that he had with Terrence Brooks and Chung and Devin McCourty and played a rookie like Juwan Williams a little bit more in the back end, you know, to make up for the fact that Harmon wasn't there. Or maybe they would have, you know, moved on from Landon Roberts and given Landon Roberts' snaps, all of those, to Juwan Bentley, you know, and that would have been the cheaper route to go in that vein. I think they have a couple of decisions like that again this year that they could save some cap space and make some more room to go out and get, you know, the guys that we all want, you know, in terms of the skill players and more offensive firepower and things like that. Or they might just go back to the same route that they did this past season and kind of bring a lot of these veterans back. So I think a lot of it also depends on what Tom Brady does, certainly just in general, because if Brady is not back, then this team is completely different, obviously. And right. The goals of the team, even say publicly, is always to win a Super Bowl. If Jared Stidham's the quarterback, then I think that we have to have much significantly different expectations for this team, you know, next year. So I think that could change a lot of their personnel decisions. You know, if Jared Stidham's the quarterback, do you need to pay Marcus Cannon $6.5 million to protect him at right tackle? Do you need to pay Rex Burkhead the $4 million? Do you need to go on the other side of the ball? Do you need to pay Dante Hightower, you know, the $12 million cap hit that he's going to have? Or can you clear the books, go young at a bunch of different positions, draft guys to replace some of the veterans that you let walk, and kind of rebuild this entire roster? I think it really depends on kind of what they do with Brady at this point.
Bravo. My biggest question right now is, you know, will Jamie Collins accept a team-friendly deal as to, you know, what he was able to do in the second half of the season? And will Danny Shelton be back?
Yeah, Jamie Collins had an interesting year because for the first 6 weeks of the season, there was genuine talk about him being a Pro Bowler and an All-Pro caliber player. I mean, he was just making plays all over the field, but he was specifically making plays behind the line of scrimmage, you know, and really reading running plays at a much better rate than he ever was early on in his career, clicking into those plays and coming through the line of scrimmage and making splash plays behind the line or stringing out running backs or whatever the case may be. His run diagnosis and ability to kind of process what he was seeing, he was doing that at such a better rate than he had ever had in his career, whether it was in Cleveland or the Patriots the first time around. The last 8 weeks or so of the season, the plays, those kind of impact plays disappeared. You know, and maybe it wasn't sustainable for him to continue to do that at the rate that he was doing it in the first half of the year. But it really kind of disappeared. The big splash plays, the turnovers, the tackles for loss, you know, that kind of stuff just wasn't there for this defense. So I think that he actually put himself in a position where he might have reset his market early on in the year. Now they'd probably look at it and say, you know, I think the other 31 teams are probably going to say he's probably best suited with Belichick in New England. That seems to be where they get the most out of him. He fits the scheme well. His versatility fits very well here. Dante Hightower, I think, and Jerod Mayo, too, from a coaching standpoint, I think both of those guys get him to buy in and get Collins to be locked in for the most part. So I don't see Collins's market being that huge. Like, I don't think he's going to get out there and get a massive contract in free agency. Now, maybe somebody will get stupid. There's going to be a ton of money again throughout the league. You know, we're talking about unprecedented amount of cap space. So maybe somebody does get crazy and offers him another kind of big money deal with some guarantees. But I just don't know if, based off of the way he played down the stretch and the way that he kind of disappeared at times from what he was the beginning of the year, I just don't know if that contract is out there for him.
Yeah, I see a lot of Patriots retiring to Miami this year. That's all I'm saying, as far as I'm going to go right there.
Yeah, yeah, I think the Dolphins will probably steal a couple of guys from the Patriots. I would say, first and foremost, Tooney. I think Joe Tooney has Miami written all over him.
Yep. There you go. With all that money that they have to spend and the woes that they have on that offensive line, it's going to hurt.
Well,
it's going to really
hurt.
Well, it's going to hurt Brandon Bolden-way. But, you know.
We had to have a Bolden mention in here. But, no, with Kyle Van Noy, a free agent, again, you have to wonder if he's going to get a lot of money thrown his way. I particularly, for myself, just my feeling, I think he's gone as well. I think he's going to be gone. Could you see a guy like Chase Winovich, who's, I think, a better pass rusher than he is, maybe an off-the-ball kind of coverage linebacker, could he step into a role that, you know, Van Noy has held the last couple of years?
Yeah, he's another guy. And Winovich, we talked about this too during training camp, where Winovich was starting to come on and they had guys like John Simon and Van Noy who were ahead of him, who both had really good years. But those two guys are now, you know, veteran players. Van Noy is certainly going to get paid. And at some point, I do think that Winovich has shown enough, especially on the ball, that you do need to give him a chance to play, you know, a significant amount of time. And kind of, you know, see if what they have with that kind of with him as a player. Talking to him about this actually during the season, you know, he said, I don't know how many snaps I'm going to get. I know it's not going to be a lot, but when I get out there, I don't know if is it going to be one, is it going to be three, is it going to be 10? So having him kind of in a role where he sees the field a little bit more, and let's see if his skill set can blossom a little bit, because he is a really productive pass rusher when he's out there. His motor is what stands out to everybody, but I think that he's a really polished and high IQ player as well. He's not just a guy that's running with a chicken with his head cut off. You know, he knows where he's going. He understands angles. He understands kind of pass to pursuit and stuff like that, and schemes and how to read things and react to things properly. So I think he's a really solid, you know, young player that they could probably benefit from opening up some playing time for him to see if he can blossom into something, because I think that he has a little bit of a different skill set than Kyle Van Noy. He's a little bit smaller, not as kind of stout and not as strong or powerful in terms of holding up against the run. But in terms of pass rusher, he definitely has, I think, traits that are maybe favorable to him over Van Noy. So if Van Noy leaves, I think that Winovich is probably first in line to see more snaps at that spot.
The person that I see as the most important to bring back on the defensive side of the ball is Devin McCourty. Again, I'm just cringing at the thought of him in a Miami Dolphins uniform. Does Bill and the Patriots, do you think they feel the same way as I do?
Yeah, you know, man, I I think that the Dolphins are probably going to poach a lot of free agents from the Patriots.
Yeah, it's just Joe.
They need to rework their offensive line. They need a center, so I wouldn't be shocked if you see Ted Karras down there. They need all the offensive line help they can get. So Tooney could be a guy that they pay for, you know, that they pay top of the market money to just kind of trying to change the tide of that offensive line. And I could see Flores going about it and taking basically everything that Belichick is willing to let go and isn't really, you know, married to. I think Devin McCourty is the one guy, though, that I'm not going to say I'm 100% certain of anything, but I'm pretty certain that Devin McCourty is probably going to be back next year. I just think that he, from a every single type of aspect, every angle that you come at it, he is such a Patriot player through and through, right, on and off the field. And he's just kind of like a tone setter for the entire program, you know, in terms of leadership, work ethic, you know, playing style and the way that he goes about his business, and then also productivity on the field too, and how that all matches up and marry and kind of comes together. We talk about Tom Brady kind of, you know, being the symbol of the Patriot way, so to speak, and how they do things. And I think Devin McCourty on the defensive side of the ball has taken on that persona just as much as Brady, maybe even in some respects, in terms of just doing things the way that they want them to be done. And then in terms of his on-field, you know, he's still a great safety. He's still a great you know, defensive back and kind of do a bunch of different things. Still a great ball hawker in center field. And he also is kind of the quarterback of the secondary. The way that he gets them into the checks and into the calls that they need to be in, the situational type stuff that he does, he's really coordinating the defense on the field. And I think that's a huge help for a young coaching staff on that side of the ball and a young play caller in Steve Belichick. I'm sure that having guys like Hightower and McCourty out there has been a huge help.
Let's talk about the ultimate Patriot, and that's Matthew Slater. I know a lot of people are saying that Matthew is ready to maybe start his next career and his ministry and stuff. I think it's paramount. We just talked about how nobody embodies the Patriot way like Brady, like McCourty, and I think the third head of that Hydra is Matthew Slater. How important is it for Matthew to still be in a Patriots uniform next year, and what do you think the chances are?
Yeah, you know, he's one of those players that there's always going to be people out there that don't understand how important he is to the team because he only plays in the kicking game, right? Mm-hmm. And there's just going to be people out there that just are like, how important really is it? You can find a million guys to cover kicks. And that, you know, maybe that's true. But the point of the matter is that he made another All-Pro team. He probably had his best season as a pro at the advanced age that he's at, which is pretty impressive. And really his leadership skills throughout the entire team are just, it reverberates throughout the entire team. And those locker room speeches that we do here, we kind of see snippets of them on Patriots.com following wins when they do, you know, when he breaks down the team and stuff like that. Players on the team, though, have told us, you know, the media, that Slater's speeches are, they make you want to run through a wall.
Right.
Muhammad Sanu said that he gave a speech after his first game, his first win as a Patriot, and he wanted to go play another game. You know, he was that energized by the speech, and he said that he was as moved by Slater speaking than he has been by anybody else in a football locker room in his entire playing career. So this is a guy that he's just the right kind of human that you want on your team. You know, and he's a born and a natural leader. I think other guys.
Oh, that was beautiful. That was perfect. Oh, sorry, but go ahead.
I think other guys, you know, like a Brady, like an Edelman, you know, those guys are leaders for other reasons. And I think that those guys can be rah-rah leaders, and they can also be leaders by example. But I think Slater is a true leader of people, you know, a guy that could, like, you know, run for office and lead a country or lead
a man who says, excuse me, and an entire crowd of people will just hush.
Right.
You know, without right. without any bravado or anything. He just stands up, excuse me, and everybody will just calm down, and then he'll go into, wow, that was fantastic, buddy. Go ahead, finish your thought on whether or not he's going to come back.
Yeah, I think that he, you know, I think that it's 50-50. He definitely said at the end of the season that he was going to sit down and take some time with his family to talk about retirement. So he did bring up the R word, you know, like it's yep. not like he's running away from it. So I think it's a possibility that he does retire. I think it's really truly 50-50 whether or not he comes back or not. But even if he doesn't come back in a playing capacity, you know, they got to find a way to get him around the team in some way. He's not going to coach, right? Because he's not going to invest that much time. But even if he's just around, you know, there's always guys that are just come around just to talk to some of the younger players or to talk to.
Who was it that we lost to Texas last
Jack,
year?
Jack Easterby.
Yeah.
Jack Easterby.
Like an Easterby type role, maybe. Yeah. You know, and I just think that it's just when you have a locker room of repeat Super Bowl champions, you have the GOAT standing there, you have the greatest head coach of all time standing there, and all eyes in the room are on the special teams captain.
Mm-hmm.
That just tells you the way that he holds the room with such kind of power in that room. You know, he's standing in there, and you got Belichick, you got Brady, you got Edelman, you got the best cornerback in the game and Stephon Gilmore, you have Devin McCourty, you have Hightower, you have Bob Kraft and Jonathan Kraft standing off to the side, you have Dante Scarnecchia, you have all these football legends, guys that are going to be Hall of Famers, guys that are going to go down as legends of the game, and it's Matthew Slater in the middle of the huddle. You know, he's the one that's holding the entire room.
Right. I'm convinced that if you sent Matthew Slater to the Middle East, he could end problems there in an hour and a half. I really do.
Maybe.
I really do. I am not. That's not hyperbole. That's not, you know, anything else, folks. That's the way it is. Ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking with our good friend Evan Lazar. He always makes time whenever we call. I mean, even at the last, I think I got in touch with Evan on Friday. What are you doing on Tuesday? And then we had to switch it to Monday. And yeah, no problem, Murph. Yeah, no problem, Murph. I know he's got 17 different things to do throughout his day. But tell everybody where they can watch you, where they can about your great podcast, which we don't, you know, plug enough, and of course where they can read your stuff.
Sure. So you can read everything I write on clnsmedia.com. Follow me at EZLazar, L-A-Z-A-R. That's kind of the hub of where I post everything, the podcast, everything I write, our YouTube videos on the CLNS Media YouTube page. And yeah, you know, we're in off-season mode now, obviously, but we'll have plenty of off-season topics. And then after the Super Bowl, I'll start turning directly to the draft and focusing primarily on that. But we have free agency, we have the draft coming up, so we'll keep busy, and obviously we'll still keep tabs on what's going on in the Super Bowl, and I'm writing something on the Jimmy G topic, obviously, that everybody's talking about today right now. So, yeah, go check that out on clnsmedia.com, and follow me at EZ Lazar.
Fantastic. EZ, thank you so much for being here, man. We really appreciate it. Thank you for shaving that beard. That was really nice of you.
Wow,
you were starting to look like Abe Lincoln there, man. I like the trim job that you did, man.
Cold, man. I needed some, you know, I needed a
cut for
my face. Hold
out, there. I can't do. See, man, this is the point in the conversation where everybody says, "Man, I love coming on and talking to Murph." Shit, and he had to freaking, you know, kick me on the way out the door. Fuck that asshole. And but no, EZ will be back again, and we'll be back again real soon. Steve, take us out of here.
All right. Thanks again for Evan Lazar for joining us from CLNS. Be sure to check out all his great work on there. We want to thank everyone for listening. For myself, Steve Balistrieri, Thomas Murphy, all of us here at One Patriot Place, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.